It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Tipped employees are required to be paid minimum wage, just like everybody else. But the rule is more for the employer. An employer can take a credit against minimum wage for a portion of the tips the employee receives. So, for example, the employer is required to pay at least $2.13 an hour in wages and can take a credit for the difference between $7.25 and $2.13, which is $5.12, and not have to pay that as long as the employee is making minimum wage when the cash wage of $2.13 an hour and the tip credit are added together.
Private attorney Joanna Suez from the law firm of Marks & Harrison explains the Fair Labor Standards Act and how its minimum wage and overtime provisions apply to tipped employees, and the employment problems faced by people convicted of so-called barrier crimes are the topic of this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 150, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. Ain't gonna let this discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let this discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land. And now, this week's news you can use. Earlier this month, a company called CoreLogic introduced a new type of credit report based on a giant database it maintains on items the traditional credit bureaus do not keep. This includes missed rental payments, evictions, child support judgments, property tax liens, delinquent homeowners association dues, mortgages made by small lenders, and any applications for payday loans along with your repayment history. CoreLogic has formed a partnership with FICO, the provider of one of the most popular credit scores used by lenders, to create a new consumer score based on the new data. While the CoreLogic credit report is now available to all types of lenders, the actual score, which will be ready in March, is being created specifically for mortgage and home equity lenders and could be used for other types of credit. For many consumers, the files are likely to reveal black marks that previously went undetected, which may damage an otherwise clean record. An estimated 100 million American consumers will have a CoreLogic credit report, while more than 200 million people have traditional reports from the big three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. CoreLogic gets its information from a variety of databases and sources, including its own customers, and says that it updates its reports daily. A lot of its information is derived from the nation's courthouses and public records. It receives information about renters through its Safe Rent business and about payday loan borrowers through its Teletrack unit. Next year, it will begin to evaluate whether to include even more data, including your payment history on utility and cell phone bills. All of this worries consumer advocates at the National Consumer Law Center, who question the type of information being fed into the new files. Sometimes people don't pay their rent for a very good and legal reason. Perhaps their landlord failed to correct a repair or maintenance problem, which might not be stated in the report. CoreLogic now is subject to the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which governs consumer reporting agencies. This means consumers can dispute any information believed to be incorrect. Within a year, the new report will be available at www.annualcreditreport.com, where consumers are entitled to one free copy annually. That same rule applies to the big three credit bureaus currently on the site. Until the CoreLogic report can be requested online, you can call toll-free 1-877-532-8778 to get a copy. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Wright versus Roanoke Redevelopment and Housing Authority. Tenants living in low-income housing projects in Roanoke sued in federal court, claiming the housing authority overbilled them for their utilities and thereby violated the rent ceiling imposed by the Brook Amendment to the Housing Act of 1937, limiting rent and utilities to 30% of income. The U.S. District Court and the Court of Appeals concluded they did not have a right to sue because the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, had exclusive authority to enforce the Brook Amendment. But in 1987, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed and found no express indication that exclusive enforcement authority was with HUD, and that the tenants had a private right of action to sue. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Wright versus Roanoke Redevelopment and Housing Authority is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time once again for this week's question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Could you tell us your name and where you're from?
My name is Cornelia, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Cornelia. What question do we have this week?
My question is, I pled guilty to a bad check charge over 6 years ago. I was told I could not be employed by certain companies due to barrier crimes. I want to know, what are barrier crimes? How long do such crimes affect a person? And if the powers that be of Virginia could one day look into being more understanding to those that have committed a crime once and clearly have no intention of committing crimes but are trying to move on with life to care for their family?
Well, Cornelia, that's an excellent question, and I certainly can deal with parts one and two, and I'll try to deal briefly with part three. A barrier crime is a crime that will serve as a bar. You cannot work in certain jobs, particularly jobs providing care to children, the elderly, and the disabled. And that even includes volunteers who are unpaid. So that would include schools, child care or daycare centers, would also include assisted living facilities, homes for adults, adult care facilities, nursing homes. As the statute says, any business providing care to children, the elderly, or disabled. Now, the statute has two classes of, I guess, offenses or crimes that would be considered barrier crimes. The first is what are listed as barrier crimes, and the second is what's listed as an offense. A barrier crime means a conviction of murder or manslaughter, malicious wounding, abduction, assaults and bodily woundings, robbery, carjacking, threats of death or bodily injury, felony stalking, sexual assault, arson, drive-by shooting, use of a machine gun or sawed-off shotgun in a crime of violence, pandering, crimes against nature involving children, incest, taking indecent liberties with children, abuse or neglect of children, failure to secure medical attention for an injured child, obscenity offenses, possession of child pornography, electronic facilitation of pornography, abuse and neglect of incapacitated adults, delivery of drugs to prisoners, escape from jail, felonies by prisoners, So that's a long list. And as you can tell, that list doesn't include a bad check charge. So one might wonder, well, why would that be a barrier crime at all? Well, and that's because of the second definition, which is that of an offense. And that applies only to the case of child welfare agencies, which would basically be businesses or volunteers providing care to children and daycare centers and child care centers. And for those agencies, an offense that would basically be a barrier crime means conviction of any other felony not included in the definition of a barrier crime unless 5 years have elapsed since the conviction. The only good news here is that the barrier of a conviction of any other felony goes away after 5 years. As to why the Commonwealth of Virginia is so harsh, that needs to be taken up with the Virginia General Assembly. Is this information helpful to you?
Yes, it was.
Thank you for being on the show. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law office of Marsh & Harrison in the near west end of Henrico County, and we're speaking with Joanna Suez, one of the attorneys with the firm, and we will be talking about the Fair Labor Standards Act and how it applies to tipped employees. Welcome to the show, Joanna.
Thanks so much for having me.
Nice to have you here. Would you tell our listeners, please, what is the Fair Labor Standards Act?
The Fair Labor Standards Act is a law that was passed by Congress in 1938, basically to protect employees. It covers overtime pay, minimum wage, and it does actually have a child labor provision.
And what is the current minimum wage?
Current federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, and Virginia's is the same as the federal.
Now, I gather that even though the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, there are different rules for tipped employees, and we'll talk about them shortly. But first of all, who is considered a tipped employee?
Well, a tipped employee is anybody who makes more than $30 a month in tips.
And is there any particular definition of tips?
No, not really. It's usually money that comes from a customer for services well done. Now, there are certain technical things that don't count as tips. For example, one thing that doesn't count as tips is a service charge that may be added to a bill. For example, if you rent a room and the restaurant adds a particular service charge for use of the room.
Or, for example, in some restaurants, they might say 15% gratuity or 18% gratuity will automatically be added to check for parties of six or more. Would that be an example?
No, that actually would count as tips for the employee.
Okay, so what are the special rules then that apply to tipped employees?
Well, tipped employees are required to be paid minimum wage just like everybody else. But the rule is more for the employer. An employer can take a credit against minimum wage for a portion of the tips the employee receives. So, for example, the employer is required to pay at least $2.13 an hour in wages and can take a credit for the difference between $7.25 and $2.13, which is $5.12, and not have to pay that as long as the employee is making minimum wage when the cash wage of $2.13 an hour and the tip credit are added together.
So are there special rules that the employer has to follow in order to get the tip credit? Are there requirements that the employee be notified of this?
The employee and the employer have to have an agreement about this prior to beginning their work. But that's really the only requirement. Now, the FLSA also requires employers to keep certain records of the employees who work. And so that kind of a little bit of a requirement because the employer needs to account for the employee's time and their rate of pay and their overtime pay and that kind of thing. But as far as whether someone can be paid a tip, that's an agreement that has to happen at the beginning of the employment.
And what if the employee or the prospective employee doesn't want to agree? Does that essentially mean they don't get a job?
They don't get a job, right. Unless the employer, I guess, decides to hire them anyway, but no.
So once this agreement is made, does the employee get some sort of information every pay period as to how much the cash wages are, how much the tip credit is, or is this something strictly that the employer has to keep themselves?
The employer has to keep that themselves. They do not necessarily have to provide that information each pay period to the employee. It's probably good business practice to keep your employees informed like that, but it's not required.
Now, I understand that some tipped employees participate in what they call a tip pooling plan. How does that work, and who can be involved in that?
Sure. Employees who can be involved in a tip pooling plan that's required by their employer, but there are only certain people who can participate. And generally, the common thread is employees who deal with the public. So, for instance, a bellhop at a hotel, or a waiter or waitress, a bartender, the busboy who comes out and cleans the table, can be involved in a required tip pooling scheme. Now, that does not mean that you can't share your tips with other people, but as long as that's voluntary, that's okay.
In that situation, then, the tip credit that the employer is giving to one employee would be the same as, I guess, for every employee.
Right.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Joanna Suez, an attorney at the law firm of Marks & Harrison, about the Fair Labor Standards Act and how it applies to tipped employees, and that the minimum wage for tipped employees is not $2.13 an hour plus tips, but rather is $7.25 an hour minus tips, up to a tip credit of $5.12 an hour. All right, now, do you find that employers routinely know and follow the law, or are they just ignorant of it, or maybe even willfully ignorant of it?
Well, I think most employers try to follow the law, but because this is such a particular situation, I think they don't always get it right with how to credit those tips. I think most people understand overtime to be time and a half of your hourly rate. And so many restaurants and other employers who have tipped employees mess up when it comes to the overtime pay.
And what are the overtime pay rules? First of all, I guess under the Fair Labor Standards Act, what are the overtime rules?
Well, basically, the Fair Labor Standards Act requires that you get paid 1.5 times your regular rate of pay for all hours you work over 40 in a work week, unless your job duties meet one of the exemptions or exceptions. And then that could be an entire other radio show. But that's basically the way it is. And being a tipped employee is one of those exceptions.
So how would tipped employees be paid overtime, or do they not get overtime?
Tipped employees do get overtime. But the difference between a tipped employee and a regular hourly worker is that the employer can take the tip credit against overtime as well. You know, this gets a little bit confusing, but basically it's the same process as for the regular hourly rate. If the employee and the employer agree that the cash wage rate is, for example, $2.13 an hour, that makes the tip credit $5.12 an hour against minimum wage. Well, the employer cannot take a greater tip credit against the overtime rate than against minimum wage. So said another way, minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, overtime is $10.88. They can only take a tip credit of $5.12 an hour on the $10.88.
Okay, so in other words, when the tipped employee goes over 40 hours a week and they're entitled to that time and a half, that extra pay has to be cash wages. It can't be additional tips to get up to the 1088, which is the requirement for every hour over 40 in a week.
That's right. That's right. And so what that means is if your cash wage is $2.13 an hour, your minimum overtime pay is going to be $5.76 an hour. And many employers get that wrong. What they end up doing is paying time and a half of $2.13, and that's incorrect.
So they should really be paying $5.76 an hour.
At a minimum, yes.
At a minimum, and then the tip credit of $5.12 an hour.
Yes.
But under no circumstances, you're saying, can the tip credit be any greater than $5.12 an hour?
That's right.
So what should tipped employees be looking for to see if their employer is following the law or not?
Well, hopefully they're getting some kind of information about what their wage rate is. And if that's the case, then their pay stub is probably going to say what their hourly rate is and whether that's being calculated correctly. The tipped employees should be looking for that to start with. If they're not getting information on their pay stub about it, then I always recommend to people that they keep their own hours in a notebook that they keep themselves, and then they can compare what they're being paid with what they think they should be paid.
And what should tipped employees do if they think that the employer is just not following the law, not paying them the $7.25 an hour, which is the tip credit plus the $2.13 combined for hours that are up to 40 hours a week, or not getting paid the $10.88 for every hour that's more than 40 hours a week? What should people do if they think their employer is not following the law in that respect?
Well, the first thing I recommend is just to talk to the employer, because sometimes it's just a matter of not understanding properly how it's supposed to be done. If that doesn't fix the problem, then, you know, I always recommend that you call an attorney, just because, you know, sometimes that's the only way you can get anything accomplished.
And is there some also federal agency that might be of assistance?
Yes. Now, you can also call the Department of Labor, the Wage and Hour Division. That's the federal Department of Labor. I believe the website is www.dol.gov. And there is a Wage and Hour Division. And you can call and make a claim there and tell them about it. And they will investigate for free. That doesn't cost the person to call anything. They will investigate.
And do you find the Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division to be diligent in these, or do you find them just to be just overwhelmed with too many complaints and not enough staff to do them?
It usually does take a while because there are a lot of complaints and probably not enough staff. But recently, the Obama administration has hired many more investigators and is doing a much better job of enforcing wage and hour laws. So we find that that's starting to be a pretty effective way of getting things done.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Joanna Suez, a attorney at the law firm of Martin Harrison in the near west end of Henrico County, about the Fair Labor Standards Act and how it applies to tipped employees. Thank you so much for clarifying what is often a very confusing law.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me again.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's strange but true law is from Title 37.2, which deals with behavioral health and developmental services. Community services boards provide treatment for mental illness, mental retardation, and substance abuse. But under Code of Virginia Section 37.2-511, the consumer is liable for the expenses of services. Only two things halt this liability: receiving government aid to the blind or disabled, or receiving treatment or services for a total of 1,826 days. Why such an unusual number? That's how many days there are in 5 years, as long as one of those 5 years is a leap year. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Hippocratic Oath requires doctors to, first, do no harm. But what happens if they do? Join us next week when private attorney Tim Litzenberg discusses medical malpractice and why this is expert and not do-it-yourself law, in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on July 7, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.